Hello, you're watching Talking Europe. My guest today is the Speaker and Chairperson of the Ukrainian Parliament, Ruslan Stefanchuk. He was elected in October 2021, just a few months before full-scale war began. A highly experienced political hand, he's a close ally of President Volodymyr Zelensky and second in line to the presidency under Ukraine's constitution. He's also a respected legal scholar and a member of the National Academy of Legal Sciences of Ukraine. Welcome to the program. You've been on an official visit to France. You gave a speech in the French Senate, and you've also discussed defense industrial projects with senior French officials. What are you actually working on together with France?
First of all, I would like to express my sincere gratitude to my French colleagues who invited me during such historical days to be here together with you. This is a great honor for me to represent the Ukrainian Parliament, the Ukrainian people, and to talk about the needs that are urgent for now today. We discussed a lot of questions, and the most important of them is the word of gratitude for everything that France has already done for Ukraine. I came with words of gratitude to the French people for the active support that we have been receiving, but also I came with the words of request, a word of request that we need to continue this fight together with our friends all over the world, including Europe and France. I came with the words that what is extremely needed now in Ukraine, the air defense system, the issues connected with providing Ukraine more weapons to make sure that we can withstand this attack. And of course, I came to talk about the sanctions, I came to talk about the frozen assets, I came to talk about the legal solutions to
this
question.
I'd like to ask about that issue of sanctions. And of course, as I said, you're a legal scholar. How do you understand the current barriers to unlocking this resource? Because of course, as you know, the French government doesn't want to use the assets themselves, but only the windfall on the profits. And that's the position of many EU countries as well, in fact.
Yesterday, we had a very good discussion on this topic, and as lawyers, we said that the law can protect only the good and the justice, and the law cannot protect the aggressor, the killer, the murderer, the rapist, and the law must be strong, and we must find the mechanism to make sure that the one who violates this law needs to be brought accountable for these violations. If this does not happen, then in the near future, anyone who has the strength, the power, and has no conscience will do anything knowing that their assets are guaranteed. No, we must create the precedent according to which every criminal must know that they will pay for this war with their money. The check for this war will be paid with this money.
We can't ignore the Middle East situation, of course, Mr. Stefanchuk, and given that Iran has been supplying Shahed drones to Russia, is it actually a good thing for Ukraine that Iran is being militarily degraded by Israel at the moment?
So let me say that from the very first days, Russia has brought around itself the axis of evil. So this is Russia itself, Iran, whose Shaheds every night terrorize Ukrainians, and also the Northern Korea is part of this axis, whose soldiers are fighting in this war. And our task is to counter this axis of evil. We need to create an axis of good, which will be fighting for the next generations in our world, because this is extremely important to understand that this is no longer the war only for their territories. This is about the development of the future generations. And the weaker our enemies are, of course, the weaker Iran and North Korea are and Russia are, the better it is for us. And the less the peaceful citizens will suffer and the less the Ukrainian infrastructure will suffer, and we will be closer to our common victory.
After the October 7th attack on Israel, your president, Mr. Zelensky, noted that there was a drop in U.S. aid to Ukraine, and of course, suddenly the Middle East became the center of attention, Ukraine not so much. Is the same thing happening now? Is that a risk now for you?
Of course, we have always believed, and we do believe, that the United States are one of our powerful partners, and we have received a lot of support from the United States, and we want to make sure that this continues, because the U.S. is the country which is a foothold of democracy and the country that ensures the international law. And Putin wants to ruin this international order. And, of course, Ukraine wants to make sure that those agreements that Ukraine received about supply with weapons are fulfilled, and Ukraine today is investing a lot into the victory by protecting the eastern flank of NATO from the Russia's assault, and we are paying a terrible price for this. We're paying with the lives of our best sons and daughters, and that's why it's very important to make sure that our partners understand this and support Ukraine. Yes, we need American support, and we hope that the U.S. will go back to this discussion and will make everything possible to make sure that Ukrainians are confident that we are not alone.
The U.S. has confirmed, though, that it's going to reduce its military aid to Ukraine in the 2026 budget. There are some European countries that are trying to fill this gap, the UK, France, some of the Nordic countries. But presumably there are other countries in the EU and NATO that you're hoping for more military support from.
Of course. Let's be completely honest. The war is a horrible math, which includes the financial component, which includes the military component, and which unfortunately contains the human component. And we must understand that in order to win in this war, we need to have all these components filled in. And of course, we are going to work with our partners to make sure that if we have less financial support, we'll be asking Europe, the representatives of the European continent, where the war is waging now, to increase this support for Ukraine. Because I emphasize once again, the Ukrainian army, you know, it just happened. Now, the Ukrainian army is on the front line of protecting the democratic principles and values that unite the whole of Europe.
Let's talk a bit about Ukraine's EU accession process. The European Commission has said that Ukraine has done its homework in three clusters, as they're called. Right now, the process is being held up or certainly slowed down by the Hungarian government. Indeed, Hungary has been holding a referendum on Ukraine's membership of the EU. So is this process actually blocked now?
Look, I deeply respect all the positions of many countries, but we have to come from one common standpoint. So Ukraine, despite the war, is fulfilling all its obligations to the European Union. We adopt the laws. We carry out reforms. We are not asking for some excuses for Ukraine, to be given some simplified track. We honestly take our path, but that's the same kind of honesty that we are counting on from our European partners, and we want to make sure that Hungary is not a country that is Putin's veto on Ukraine's accession to EU. Putin is not the EU member. He has no right of veto in the EU, and this, I believe, is becoming a big threat for all the countries of the European Union, for all the NATO countries, when Putin is using, some countries to block the alliance decisions. So this is a huge challenge, and we need to fight this challenge inside the alliance.
Let's say a word about the reforms that you're making in Ukraine. Transparency International says that overall Ukraine's rank has improved markedly in terms of anti-corruption efforts in the last few years. But interestingly, in the 2024 rankings, Ukraine dropped slightly. And Transparency said that reforms were being carried out only formally and some were being deliberately stalled. Is there a backsliding or backtracking now on these reforms?
Absolutely. No backtracking at all. So I am the head of the parliament that adopts all the laws associated with our anti-corruption policy, and the parliament has never been withholding and not blocking any kind of initiatives. On the contrary, every week we adopt the laws that bring us closer to the European Union, and our task is to make everything possible that Ukraine meets all the requirements. And the situation has changed in Ukraine back in 2005 and in 2025 are different countries. And today we can bring to responsibility the top official, demonstrating to others that the fight against corruption is irreversible in our country. And for example, the ex-head of the Supreme Court received a suspicion, and a couple of ministers received this notification of suspicion. That's the first time ever in the history of Ukraine. And Ukraine's President Zelensky, me and the Prime Minister, we have a zero tolerance to corruption.
There's a new president in Poland, Karol Nawrocki, who criticized benefits given to Ukrainian war refugees during the election campaign. He doesn't support Ukraine's membership of NATO. Has there been a change in Ukraine's influence in Europe because of this new president in Poland, do you think?
I think that Poland is one of our closest neighbors, and the Polish people are, and we deeply respect the Polish people, because in the most difficult of times during the war, it was Poland that became our closest ally territorially too. There are military hubs in Poland, we received all the types of support from Poland, and we are confident that the support from the Polish people will continue, and I think that we will find some common our common relations with the newly elected president will be also established. We have a couple of historical issues, and I'm sure we'll be able to solve them. But I'm sure that Poland, like nobody else, understands it's the best because it's the closest to the Ukrainian border, and they understand that the biggest threat is from Russia to Poland. And I believe that this needs to bring us together and also improve our relations.
World Refugee Day is marked every 20th of June. EU member states have agreed to extend temporary protection to 4 million Ukrainians who are currently living in Europe, so until March 2027. What is a durable solution? Obviously, very long term, you'd want them to come back to Ukraine. But in the meantime, should there be a discussion on some kind of more permanent status for Ukrainians that have fled in, and that are now in Europe?
You know, Ukrainians who are in Ukraine and abroad Ukraine, this is the golden resource of our country. And we want to make sure that all Ukrainians who are temporarily now abroad and they are far from this war, we want to make sure that after this war is over, they have the possibility to go back to Ukraine. And we need their experience, we need their willingness to rebuild Ukraine, because our task is to make sure that after the just and lasting peace is established, Ukraine recovers as the phoenix from the ashes. And for this period, we are very grateful to our partners who ensure their dignified and pleasant conditions of stay in their countries.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being my guest, Ruslan Stefanchuk, the Speaker of the Ukrainian Parliament. Glad you could watch us for this episode here on Talking Europe. Do stay with us on France 24.